Ars Electronica 2009 Human Nature Podcast.
Hello everyone. I get the pleasure of being the last speaker, and it's been amazing to listen to everybody's presentations from this day, and I think you'll all agree with me that it's been an amazing time, really, intellectually, to go together on this journey to think about cloud computing. What I'll try to do is talk about the cloud, and I'm looking at it from the point of view of it being the internet, basically. I'm talking about environmental change in Africa specifically. At Global Voices, we do look at worldwide, we track what bloggers say around the world, but I'm particularly focused on sub-Saharan Africa and other areas where mainstream media doesn't really touch much. So what keeps you up at night? I mean, the big problems in the world right now, I think you have the problem, environmental degradation, and obviously the big challenge of education and also of health. Of these, I think what I'd like to talk about today is mostly about the environment. One of those big problems, and I think Fink Beiner, when he opened Ars Electronica yesterday, the big question is, what are we going to do about climate change? That map is from The Economist, and the dotted areas are the areas that are areas most risk from climate change. When I was growing up, we used to have African gray parrots coming over to, they would just fly over to our house and I would feed them grain or whatever. In 1997, when I left for the US, those are quite a good number. When I went back in 2002, the numbers had dwindled substantially. I could barely see any of them. That's because their habitat was destroyed. In 2005, there were none. You'd be hard-pressed to find climate change deniers in sub-Saharan Africa. Because we see the problem of climate change on a very visceral level, it may not be very apparent out in the West or wherever you are, but you're starting to see some changes. In Africa, we see it, it affects our daily life in a very real way. This is probably the depressing part of the presentation. It'll get better, I promise. But let me take you to Kenya. That's where I'm from, and we have a really big problem because one of the water towers, this is called Mau Forest. It's called a water tower because the microclimate, basically you have trees and they help create rainfall. And that water feeds the rivers that are coming from that particular area. And the Mau Forest is one of those very important water towers. The problem is we've had destruction. Basically, almost over 100,000 acres of forest have been destroyed since the year 2000. This is a really big problem, and it's quite an emergency. If you follow the news out of Kenya, there's quite a lot of debate in the government, and I'm not going to go into the parliament and the politics of that, but it's a really big problem. Another visceral example is one of the water towers feed a lake, and some of these lakes, one of them is called Lake Elementaita, and from the picture there you can see very clearly how it's drying up from the left-hand side. It's quite problematic. So if there are any climate change deniers out there, I would highly recommend that they go to Kenya and, or even talk to a Kenyan and see that it really is a big problem. Most recently also, we have a problem with drought. This picture was taken in Kileleshwa, which is a suburb of Nairobi. When you have cows being brought into a suburb of a city, that's kind of how we know Kenyans, that us Kenyans kind of know about this, that the drought has gotten really bad when you have traffic jams being created because of cows in the street. Really, I'm not kidding. It happens. Where you have a traffic jam because there are cows crossing the street. But it's a really big problem. And that's a picture from the Nairobi National Park. It's quite problematic because, again, the Maasai herders are bringing... the Nairobi National Park is one of the few areas where they can still get grazing, areas for grazing. And with the drying up, the meteorologists are predicting El Nino-type weather. Whether that'll come is quite another... it's also another problem. You have the drying out and the flooding out. And this is what happens when those rains come. With climate change also, you have areas like Madagascar where you find out about cyclones. And I think this is something that Global Voices does very well because it brings you these stories that you wouldn't otherwise hear about. And this is a story that was highlighted in Global Voices in January of this year. And I'm pretty sure all of you are pretty cognizant of the problem of pollution, air pollution. While the world leaders pay lip service to climate change in their speeches, and there are people doing good things for the environment, and I'm going to highlight some of the examples of these people and how some of them use the internet and the cloud to do this. And I hope we can draw some inspiration from that and see how we can move from online talk or about climate change or about environmental action and moving into offline action. One of the biggest inspirations to us in the African blogosphere is Corneille Awango. He was featured at the TED Global Conference, and he was a former poacher who turned into a botanist and conservationist. He's on the left-hand side over there, and he works at the Ituri Forest, where he's uncovered over 200 species and basically 200 species of ilanas and 600 different species of trees. He's also very instrumental in the protection of the okapi. Another, I'd like to go straight to Uganda, where there were some protests at about the Mabira Forest. This is a very revered part of Uganda because the government was going to sell this land off to a sugarcane company, but people protested. They went to the streets. And how did they organize this? They used mobile phones. And let's go to Egypt, where the blogger Tamer Mabrouk, he documented the pollution happening at Manzala River. The problem with this is it brings up the question of when people express themselves online, are they exposing themselves to offline consequences? For example, for Tamer, he got sued by the company that was polluting. And guess what? The laws in Egypt, they actually ruled against him. He had to pay that company the equivalent of $700. I mean, those are some of the questions that are coming up with expression online and issues of our participation online. Are we bringing down the cost for... People should be able to freely express themselves online without the threat of offline consequences. Let's go to South Africa, where they have a very vibrant blogosphere where they talk about the environmental issues around. And one of the blogs called urbansprout.co.za has a green directory that is indispensable. So for you, for those of you who are planning on going to South Africa for World Cup and you'd like to maintain the green lifestyle, there is a directory for you that you can find out where the organic coffee shops are. You can find all that information on Urban Sprout. And something interesting, when Evgeny Morozov was talking about slacktivism, or what Teddy, when we were talking earlier, calls it joinism, where you decide, okay, I care about, let's say, the Billion Tree campaign, so I'll join the Facebook group. But what happens after that? We're finding that I'm starting to see some interesting inspiration from actually South African bloggers, because the corollary to, you know, joinism or slacktivism is people self-organizing using Facebook and having an offline impact that is lacking or that you don't see with, you know, the slackers that Evgeny pointed out. Some of these examples are, for example, there's a group called Friends of the Lembus Forest and Wildlife Direct. They use new media to campaign about conservation around Africa. Also, gorilla.cd. So the challenge now I'd like for you to imagine is going from static data to dynamic environmental data and making that available for people to access and to contribute online. As we're talking about the cloud, there was this Atlas of Our Changing Environment, which is a 60 megabyte PDF that was made available by the United Nations Environment Program. Problem is, it's 60 megabytes. A regular Kenyan at that time, we didn't have high-speed internet access. That's sort of changing now, but it would have cost $80 to have a copy mailed to them. How useful is that? Not very useful. Moving information that is useful about the environment from PDFs into a form that is a mashup. But let's take that further. I'm going to rush here a little bit because I'm running out of time. But the idea that we would need to design also for the mobile phone, because as VintSurf mentioned at Lyft conference, the next generation of people who are coming online in Africa, some of them are going to use the mobile phone to access the cloud. How are they being served information? And is that information available for activists or for them to be activists? And that's something that I think we need to start thinking about. And probably if we can design for that, that would be sort of the next generation of taking the cloud to also encompass the mobile experience. An example of some, just because I come from Kenya, where mobile money transfers, this is something that, this is an idea that could be used as you're talking about cap and trade emission system plans or giving incentives for action on the environment for to support reforestation or to support conservation. If you're talking about that type of system, for it to be effective in areas like Africa, you start have a really good way of incorporating that is to channel that money through mobile money transfers. This is already happening. There's a company, there's an organization called Clean Air Action Corporation that is transferring more than 6,000 transactions using M-Pesa. Imagine linking this to Kiva or the cap and trade system for emissions, channeling money through mobile money transfers to the people who will actually make the change on the ground. And it comes down to people, to you and me, and what you can do. There's a lot of apathy. I mean, the environment problem is such a big problem. What can you do? And I would say just act individually, locally, incorporate your action into your daily lives. For example, there's the Perry family in South Africa. On each of their the family member's birthday, they plant a tree to celebrate that. And support outreach efforts, for example, Rising Voices and their Foco Madagascar efforts. And of course, do share online. And a project that we're working on is to tag environment action. So you can go from curating, we can continue to curate the global conversation online as part of Global Voices, but we can also curate global action on the environment. And this is an example of some of the people who are acting around the world. For example, this is in Limuru, a child planting a tree, and this is at an orphanage in Limuru in Palestine. In Rift Valley, this is again another example of people including action in the environment. She was going for an engagement ceremony. So that's a planting of a tree as part of tradition, as part of daily life. So the goal, I think, and the vision is to continue to use the web and the cloud as a way to document the environment, see what problems there are, but to be part of the solution. Thank you very much.